This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
A new report presents a dire portrait of hundreds of thousands of children in the Central African Republic who live in a state of permanent crisis brought on by years of conflict and international neglect.
Also, that's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have full details coming up. Also, the Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC passes a tragic milestone by becoming the second worst on record. The U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs visits Ethiopia. And a South African judge rules that former President Jacob Zuma will return to court for the next step of the corruption case against him. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. A new report presents a dire portrait of hundreds of thousands of children in the Central African Republic who live in a state of permanent crisis brought on by years of conflict and international neglect. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on the launch of a report by the UN Children's Fund on the crisis in the Central African Republic.
The UN Children's Fund considers the Central African Republic to be one of the most difficult and dangerous places in the world to be a child, and the statistics bear this out. The new UNICEF report finds 2 out of 3 children, or 1.5 million children in the CAR, need humanitarian aid to survive. It finds tens of thousands of children suffering from severe acute malnutrition are at risk of death. It says children in this war-torn country live in a constant state of fear of being killed or subjected to abuse and violence. UNICEF's representative in the CAR, Christine Muhigana, says the children are in desperate need of the world's support. She says the country briefly made headlines 5 years ago when fierce fighting broke out in the capital, Bangui. Since then, she says, the CAR has been forgotten, although the situation in the country has worsened.
Children are at risk of violence, recruitment into armed groups, sexual violence, forced labor. Malnutrition is a grave concern. More children than ever are expected to need treatment for severe acute malnutrition next year because displaced families can't farm.
The lead author of the report, Marixi Mercado, notes that earlier this month, a UNICEF official warned of potential famine in the CAR unless the security situation improves dramatically and people are able to go home to cultivate their land.
CAR's children should not have to wait for a declaration of famine until the world acts and provides more resources to the country. Because we know that by the time famine is declared, if it is declared, untold numbers of children will already have died.
UNICEF says it has received less than half of the $56.5 million appeal for CAR funding this year. UNICEF says the money is needed to provide life-saving food and medicine for severely malnourished children, as well as other needs like immunization campaigns and to provide clean water and sanitation. UNICEF says the money would also be used to set up learning and recreational centers, to provide a space for children where they can retrieve a sense of normalcy and feel what it is like to be a child again. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC has passed a tragic milestone by becoming the second worst on record. The death toll has reached 245 out of the 426 confirmed and probable cases. That still leaves it well behind the record 11,000 dead in West Africa between 2014 and 2016. But the complexity of the current outbreak makes it difficult to estimate how long before it is brought under control, despite the widespread use of a vaccine and treatment drugs for the first time. Experts say the outbreak's location in a conflict zone has left holes in the international effort. There are concerns the virus could jump to neighboring countries, which are taking preventive measures. A series of attacks by gunmen have angered residents in the opposition stronghold and sparked protests that forced aid workers to stay off the streets for days at a time. That hampers efforts to track people who have come into contact with Ebola patients. UNICEF says men should be the focus and target of HIV/AIDS preventive programs, especially those dating young women. The UN Children's Rights Advocacy Group released a new report ahead of World AIDS Day, calling for an urgent upscale of treatment and preventive programs among adolescents. From Johannesburg, Yashira Ramprasad has the story.
The report titled Children, HIV and AIDS, the World in 2030, shows there's been a slowdown in the reduction of HIV infection and AIDS-related deaths. UNICEF says if the current trend persists, at least 76 adolescents will die of AIDS every day by 2030. Deputy Chief of HIV Programming at UNICEF South Africa, Shafiq Esaji, explains some of the stumbling blocks.
We're not reaching adolescents well enough with prevention messaging, prevention programming. But on the flip side, we're also not getting the right people onto treatment. There are people living with HIV who still don't know their status. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know your status, you can't be on treatment. And if you're not on treatment, your virus levels remain high and you are more at risk of passing it on to others.
SRG says they've found in South Africa that the focus of prevention programs needs to shift towards men, especially those dating much younger women.
The work that has been done in South Africa has shown so clearly that that is an important driver of new infections amongst young women and adolescent girls, and actually is an important driver of the epidemic in general. So really stopping that behavior, making sure that men have access to testing and treatment could be a very valuable intervention, in addition to giving girls the skills, tools, and understanding they need to be able to protect themselves as well.
One young woman who was born with the virus but only found out about it as a teen is urging people to get tested. Sadie Brown says it's the first step in ensuring that anyone with HIV remains healthy.
So I found out about my HIV status at the age of 14 at a school trip. There were people from some other organization and they came through and they told us that we do HIV testing and it's free. So if you'd like to come through and test, you can come. And obviously at 14, I am not dating. I'm not yet dating. I'm not yet having any sexual intercourse. I'm like, let me just do it for the sake of making memories. And that is how I got to find out of my HIV status.
Brown, who is now 23, says she didn't reveal her status or seek treatment until 4 years after she found out about it. She's encouraging people to be more responsible and has since spent time telling the youth to do things differently. SRG says many more young people are seeking treatment immediately nowadays, but he says that while the treatment and prevention programs are better than 30 years ago, work needs to be scaled up.
The treatments are better, the options that we have for prevention are smarter. And I think we've made tremendous progress, right? Let's not deny that this is the world's 30th AIDS Day. In those 3 decades, we've made a huge amount of progress. Millions of lives have been saved, millions of people are on treatment, and millions of infections have been prevented. What our report shows, though, is that unless we ramp up this pace a little bit and supplement the work that we've done, we're not going to achieve the target of ending AIDS by 2030. Far from it.
SRG says South Africa is doing better in the fight against HIV/AIDS than most African countries. But he stressed the importance of reaching the youth, and men in particular, to ensure the number of infections is reduced even further. I'm Yashira Ramprasad for VOA News in Johannesburg.
The U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs is visiting Ethiopia. Yesterday, Tibor Naj spoke to journalists, and one topic that came up was U.S. business competition in Africa with Chinese enterprises.
Here's the point I've made before. I want to push U.S. investors towards Africa because in the past, when there was a knock on the door and African countries open the door, and if it's only the Chinese investor standing there, I can blame, you know, the African countries for doing deals with China. Next time there's a knock on the door, I want to make sure the U.S. investors are there too, and the U.S. companies, because I feel very strongly American companies have advantages. You know, we tend to create a lot of employment. We don't bring Americans over to do all the work. We also prefer equity investment so that we don't leave the country with lots of debt. And we believe in investing in Africans, not just Africa. So going forward, yes, I want to bring lots of American companies here.
There is a comprehensive ongoing reform process in Ethiopia.
Yes.
How your country will be able to support that process to succeed more in the future?
Well, that's one of the things that I'm here to talk about, because absolutely, it's an incredible reform process. One of the things, and I have made this point to other African leaders, one of the incredibly significant things that your prime minister said, and I think that this message has been not picked up by everybody, was when he said that we will no longer look at our political opposition as enemies, but as competitors. That is such a significant change, paradigm shift. I only wish, and this not only applies to Africa, I only wish countries everywhere would take up that motto, because that is exactly what an opposition is. And when I heard that, my heart just leapt for joy. So yes, absolutely, we support these reforms. They are extremely significant. And it's going to mean a lot for young people. The one thing I do have to say, having been young myself once, very long time ago, I know that patience is not something that young people have. But I do urge a certain amount of patience, because everything cannot change for the better immediately. You know, there can be a lot of effort put towards the changes, but some things will take just a little bit of time. So this political space is open, you know, thank God for that. But just a little bit of patience for these policies to work, because the whole world is applauding Ethiopia and what's going on in Ethiopia. The country is very fortunate. Thank you.
That was Tibor Nagy, the top U.S. diplomat for Africa, speaking in Addis Ababa. The Burundi government has issued an arrest warrant for former President Pierre Buyoya, who is currently serving as the AU High Representative for Mali and the Sahel. Along with 17 others, he is accused of playing a role in the assassination of the country's first democratically elected president, Melchior Ndadaye, in 1993. This comes as Burundi finds itself increasingly isolated diplomatically in Africa. Nigeria holds its presidential election in February, followed a week later by regional elections. The electoral body in charge has been working hard to ensure that all goes smoothly. The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, says it will be able to conduct credible elections. Dr. Ferdinand Otto is a senior lecturer in the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about INEC's preparations.
I think INEC, from the look of things, they are ready for the forthcoming election. Having conducted some major elections recently in Ekiti, in Osun State, and they just concluded by-elections. In Kwara State recently too. So from that test run, I think this present INEC, from the look of things, are ready for the forthcoming general election.
How ready will the electoral system be, and what needs to be done?
Yeah, just like I've just said, from the look of things, they're ready. But the logistic problems that INEC always face in terms of distribution of electoral materials, that aspect has to. Because where Nigerians normally have problems is not in the cities, it's in the hinterlands, the riverine areas. And these were the areas where they have population. And if we want election to be more credible, INEC should see how to address those critical areas. And just as a matter of digression, but which is important too, for election monitoring, I strongly believe that those areas should be monitored. the emphasis is usually on the cities, where the electoral monitors, observers will just come and they make their report. No, INEC will now extend it, allowing them to go to the hinterlands so that if there are problems, these people will be able to see and advise, because it's a process. The mistake is that people think that you get it all right at a time. No, we can't get it all right at a time. As we continue to democratize, then we continue to also correct some of the mistakes we're making. But I think we must give some credit to this present INEC. The previous INEC has laid a very good foundation, and I think this one is built on that foundation. They've improved on it systematically.
Are there any concerns about the preparations in terms of getting ballot papers ready or distributed?
Yes, the concern that most people are expressing has to do with local government at local government level. At local government level, where these materials are to go to the different polling stations and so on, we often discover that the way these materials are being distributed, some delays here and there, and that makes election to start late. This last major elections in the two states, Osun and Ekiti State, there were pockets of reports that some areas they did not get materials at early time. And I think INEC, knowing very how important this particular election is, that the stakes are very high, they should be able to address that aspect. If the materials go to Central Bank 2-3 days before the election, the night before the election, this material should go to the local government, so that nobody will have any excuse to give that their own polling station or their own ward, they did not get the materials and so on and so forth, which will not be very good for this type of election.
Are there also concerns about security for the polling stations and poll workers?
Security is a major concern. It's a major concern in the sense that considering what is going on presently in Nigeria, politicians are not relenting. They are all desperate. So I'm beginning to feel that if the security personnel that we have are not enough to go around the whole federation, then we're going to run into a problem. Because the last election, this just by election in Kwara State, the number of armed policemen that were deployed for just a constituency election, then you begin to wonder the major election, what will happen. So the federal government should be able to mobilize so that every polling station should be able to have enough security to protect the INEC officials and the voters, because the desperation among politicians is something else. The politicians are the ones who are mobilizing thugs to carry out some violence. And if we have enough security personnel, I think they'll be able to contain it, just like what they did in Kwara State. Just a quick one before I end up. The midterm election that was held in U.S., which I observed, I was curious, I wanted to observe what goes on. I didn't see a single police person. I sat down in the hall where they are voting. I went with my cousin, and nobody was harassed. And the election was going on smoothly up to 8 p.m. We can't try it here. So it's a lesson for comparative politics.
That was Ferdinand Otto, a senior lecturer of political science at the University of Lagos. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye. Well, Uber's ambition is to corner the transportation sector in Africa. By 2016, the global ride-sharing market was operating in 15 major African cities, with some 60,000 drivers in Egypt, Ghana, Kenya, Morocco, Nigeria, South Africa, Tanzania, and Uganda. But it faces stiff competition from local companies that it inspired. The proliferation of mobile and mapping technology has led African tech companies to create their own apps to aid transportation and deliver tailor-made services that are helping eliminate traffic chaos in some African cities. VOA reporter Eddie Gondo has more.
The ride-sharing market in Zimbabwe is fairly new, as G-Taxi, Windy, Emergency Taxi, Zim Taxi, Kumi, and Via Africa have in the past few months been vying for pole position. After initially operating largely in the capital, Harare, they have now moved into the country's second largest city of Bulawayo. Via Africa, owned by Telecom's giant Econet, was recently launched in the city. Clement Kawadza, Econet's regional manager for Matabeleland, speaks on his company's motivation.
The Via idea evolved through, one, listening to our customers, looking at the challenges that people are facing, and then we say what solutions are required.
Okay.
And then that's when this idea came up. That's where this idea evolved. And that it then took time perfecting it to make it work as it's supposed to be and to get to this stage. But basically, it was through looking at what gaps are there. What are people in Zimbabwe saying they want? What are their challenges? And that's what we decided to cover. Zimbabwe, we are covering Zimbabwe as a whole. But as we are doing our commercial launch, it's first. So we find we started with Harare, we are in Matabele, we go to other areas.
In South Africa, services such as Uber and Taxify have experienced resistance from established taxi operators who see them as a threat. Asked about possible turf wars in Zimbabwe, Kawadza expressed hope for cooperation.
Yes. We are coming with Vaya, we are not coming to really compete with someone, but to complement. That's why you find persons that we are targeting in terms of coming on board is that individual who have a vehicle that probably they are not using. It's spending the whole day probably parked in their workplace at home, probably they don't have anything on. So we don't expect anything that is conflicting with the existing. Because, you know, ours is like one is hiring a vehicle from an individual to go to a particular trip.
The local taxi industry is largely populated by maverick drivers using unregistered pirate taxis. One of the few, if not dominant, organized taxi transport services is Explicos Taxis, who is taking a cautious approach to ride-sharing services that they say have approached them for possible deals. Vice Chairman Arnold Mawonye explains.
We don't seem to get any negative impact which the issue to give us, but instead it will complement ourselves. Quite a number of guys coming, trying to join us, as it were. But I mean, there have been some pros and cons which we have weighed, and then by and large, we find the ones who have been actually trying to join us, they're telling us that the money is to go into the account first. Afterwards, they then disembark to us.
But
now, in this case, we're not so sure that, we'll get our money at our requested time. So we have actually shelved that and said, no, until we have proof and watertight that we'll get our money, that's when we may consider. We subscribe to competition, as it were. And we've got a niche market already, which we have been servicing, all guided.
One of the challenges that services such as Via Africa face is safety for its users. Econet officials say drivers are vetted thoroughly with police, and vehicle roadworthiness is also a strict consideration. Econet encourages women to join the service. One of the few female drivers on Via is 22-year-old Bokani Dube, a recent university graduate.
Yeah, it's been good in paying well. You can work on your own package. I've been doing it for 2 weeks. And then for security, now that it shows you the name, you can actually keep a log of the name because there's a place where you see the customer feedback. I usually knock off at 7. I can work maybe late, but I only accept requests of people that I've carried before, that I know. But for security, you can accept someone that you've dealt with before.
Ride sharing is one of those markets where companies that move fast and fast usually get to dominate the industry. Observers, however, say the real challenge that they face is cost. Via Africa charges 85 cents per kilometer compared to a flat 75 cents for ordinary pirate and established commuter transport operators such as Explicos.
Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and thanks for choosing the VOA.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.